This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
I will tell you, post B-Day, great vibes going on. All right? I mean, it was a great day. It won. It was so kind and nice and all that kind of stuff, and appreciate all the kind words. And it's nice when nice people say nice things to you. We like that. But also, it was just kind of the perfect blend of doing the thing that I love, which is, a 5-hour daily sports talk show, and getting some great time with my wife and kids. Like, I don't know what more you can ask of the world. A yacht. Bezos money. I know that there are more things, but I gotta say, if this is quote-unquote it is pretty damn good. So I'm actually feeling pretty jubilant. I've been down a great musical rabbit hole today, really for like the last couple days. One side note, the medication the doctor gave me to help deal with my foot definitely is making me feel nauseous 99% of the time. Now, I'm not going to, but I will say, would be a hell of a video if in the middle of talking today, we just got something projectile. I don't think it's going to happen. I think if it was going to happen, it would have, because I think yesterday was more of the mule kick than today is. But yeah, we're doing really well today. And I will say, the take that I'm about to bequeath upon you, and no, it's not projectile, but the take that I'm about to projectile onto you, now it is projectile. Now I've changed my mind, is something that started germinating last week. And it's kind of been kicking around my head for a while now, because every time we have the conversation, whether people in Cleveland are rooting for Deshaun to fail, there is a level of mean-spirited with just the idea of rooting for someone to fail that I struggle with. And I realize that that's a negative connotation that is applied, but that is not specific to anything specific like this specific situation with Deshaun. So I actually wanted to explore that, because the more I've thought about this, I know that there are people in Cleveland who just don't like Deshaun. And some of it's based off of the trade. Some of it's based off of previous love of Baker, or previous now love of Joe Flacco. Some of it's based on the accusations and lawsuits. Some of it's based on how he's played since he's been here. Some of it's based on, and you can see how quickly and how complicated this gets, and some of it's basically placed on that he hasn't necessarily endeared himself in any which way to Cleveland at large. I know there might be pockets of Cleveland that he's done this with, but to Browns fans in general, and to Browns fans outside of specific environments, he hasn't. And some of that's on the Browns, and some of that's on Deshaun, and some of that's on Deshaun's camp, and some of that's just the fact that we are a very provincial town, right? Right? You've got to get us for us to get you. And I don't know we've ever gotten there with Deshaun yet. It felt like we came real close with that Baltimore game, and then 2 days later, good feelings gone. But I was thinking about why every time the Browns lose, it somehow always trails back to Deshaun. And listen, the simple answer is he still hasn't played well enough, right? The Bengals are 0-3. Joe Burrow's not taking any of the heat. Well, outside of like one national guy, Joe Burrow's not taking any of the heat down in Cincinnati or nationally, because they know that offensive line still ain't great. They know that Mike Brown has been cuckoo loca when it comes to negotiating with people and pissing off Jamar Chase. And that defense isn't what it was 3 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. Oh, and by the way, it's also week three. But there is that nest egg of trust and love for Joe Burrow that Bengals fans can fall back on. And that allows you, when you have that, or good football and a guy that you like, you can then go ahead and look at, well, all right, what are we doing on defense? Maybe we shouldn't let DJ Reader go. Maybe we could have done a better job addressing parts of the secondary. But the more I've thought about, we all want this to be about Deshaun, the more I've realized that's because that's the easier way. And as fans, that is what we're looking for here. It's why, like, listen, this is not an American thing. It's not a Cleveland thing. This is a global thing. People like scapegoats. It is. And Deshaun is an easy scapegoat right now for everything that I said about 3 minutes ago. But I just was confounded by the answers and by the analysis of how Deshaun played. And I thought Ken said something, and I can't remember, I think it was like the 6:40 or 7 segment today, that, you know, if you were a Deshaun apologist, Sunday confirmed your thoughts on Deshaun, right? Well, you can't do anything in front of that offensive line. It's, you know, yada, yada, yada. If you were a Deshaun hater, well, Deshaun's the reason, you know, he's got to get the ball out quicker and, you know, he's got to, you know, throw his wide receivers open and he's wasting a defense. He's the reason why the defense has as much pressure as they do because they're constantly putting in bad situations and all that. And so the more I've thought about this, the more I realized, like, this is a commonality. Speaking of, this is not a Cleveland thing, the idea of we want this to be all about Deshaun because it's easier that way. I thought about what happened in Carolina with Bryce Young. And this was a guy that Dave Tepper, Big Daddy Tep, decided to trade up for and give up the farm to move up to one. And immediately he set him about playing for a coach that didn't run a system that fit Bryce Young. Then fired that coach 10 games into the season. Then surrounded him with nary an ounce of respectable talent, right? We talk about separation with Deshaun's receivers. Bryce Young in his rookie year was working with zero skill talent around him. Washed Adam Thielen is the best that he's got. Bad offensive line, a horrific defense. And then, by the way, they spent this offseason objectively getting worse and hiring a new head coach who was supposed to fix him, and then 3 games or 2 games into the season, they bench him. So, like, is some of that on Bryce Young maybe not being good enough? Yeah, that's fair. Right? Is some of this being on, is Bryce taking care of his side of the street? Okay, that's another fair question. But then when you picture at large, the big picture with the Panthers, well, Dave Tepper has always been a nuisance to football people around him. He's committed the absolute cardinal sin of going through X amount of coaches. What, three head coaches in 17 games for Bryce Young? And I think that's 3 different play callers as well. And he didn't surround him with talent. So as we've started to have this conversation, and by the way, that's the difference there is Deshaun's a vet and Bryce Young is a rookie. Well, Trevor Lawrence, another famed rookie, fellow Clemson quarterback. Urban Meyer was a disaster, right? He's out there kicking kickers instead of finding a way to get Trevor Lawrence off on the right foot. But then you solidify the environment, and now you're wondering, well, how much of this is on Trevor Lawrence? He looked broke last night. I don't know if anybody watched that game, and I get the Bills are better than I thought they'd be this early in the season. Trevor looks broke. He looks like Baker did in Baker's last year here, where you're like, where's the guy that we drafted? So as I've thought about these things, I understand that it's different with Deshaun because Deshaun came here seemingly a finished product. But like even in some of the ways we've talked about Deshaun, well, he shouldn't need to be perfect. You know, he shouldn't need perfection around him. That's why you traded for him. That's a thought that I've heard a lot. And it's like, yeah, that is a good general statement that has nothing to do with being on pace for being sacked 90 times. So is the O-line an excuse or is it a reason? And the big picture question is, who's failing who? And And I'll be honest with you guys, it's not as simple as the Browns are failing Deshaun or Deshaun is failing the Browns. It's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, and probably there's a concentric circle in which they're not helping each other. But we want Deshaun to be the problem because it's easier that way. Because when one guy, and specifically the quarterback, is the problem, it's easier to address that. You replace him. It's tougher to replace the head coach and the offensive coordinator. It's tougher to start wondering whether Andrew Berry's draft philosophy is getting enough good players here, no matter who the quarterback is. It's tough to address the position of desperation the Browns seemingly operated from, moving on from a perfectly fine quarterback in the name of progress. But in doing so, you completely overlooked what the guy was accused of. You completely overlooked, well, you didn't overlook, but maybe you didn't look hard enough. That's overlooking. I don't know why I polished that turd. But you completely overlooked the idea of rust. You completely overlooked the idea of fit. You completely overlooked, are we the right kind of organization? Are we the right kind of locker room 2 years in to make this kind of move with this kind of noise around it? Because even if it's not about Deshaun, it could be about the fallout from having Deshaun here and the PR hit and the constant questions that we're certainly getting here in year three of Deshaun. I mean, the whole gambit was done under the guise of, well, hey, this Deshaun Watson guy, if you take the PR hit to start, if you can get through that initial PR burst, you're not going to have to worry about another damn thing again, because then it can become about football. And yet, the football has not satiated that half of the conversation. And so that leaves us with uncomfortable questions about what the hell happened with the offensive line. That leaves us with uncomfortable questions about, well, what matters more, Kevin Stefanski having an offense that fits Kevin Stefanski or Deshaun Watson having an offense that fits Deshaun Watson? And Deshaun is the easier path, because with Kevin, you can fall back on, but he made Jacoby Brissett look like the best version of Jacoby Brissett that he's looked like one other time in his career, which I think was the full season he started in Indy, which, by the way, his record was below 500. And his record here as Brown's starting quarterback was below 500. So, okay, did the stats look good or did Jacoby really look good? But again, Kevin had that. Kevin had the Joe Flacco time. Kevin had the first year with Baker. Kevin's been to the playoffs twice. So there's things that I can look at Kevin and sell myself on, and I don't have those things here with Deshaun. And with Andrew Berry, you can point me out Anthony Schwartz. You can point me out this bust and that bust and this bust. But then you can point me to DeJuan Jones. Maybe not for the first three games of this year. You can point me to MJ Emerson or the Mari trade or the Za'Darius trade, right? It doesn't matter that a bulk of the players were drafted either by Sashi Brown or John Dorsey. Well, he's done enough. And he also hasn't had three first-round picks. Well, you know what? We could look at the Haslams, and we could look at the decision-making that led to this, that okayed this scenario, this act of desperation, when I don't know you should have been desperate 2 years ago, now going on 3 years ago. But they're light years ahead of where they were when they took over this team. They're not firing people every 3 years or every 2 years, right? The business side really seems to have done the stadium side of things the right way, the respectful way. There's one side of the equation that's been negotiating public, and it's not the Browns ownership. And oh, by the way, they're dangling a carrot that is a big, beautiful monstrosity of a stadium that finally can be the church that you and I deserve to serve at the altar of after 40 years of being on the lake with inferiorly big, actually more than 40, 70 years of being stadiums built on the lake that weren't very good. So it's not easy to say, hey, what's the leadership flaw that led to this very flawed decision, this desperate decision? It's not easy to say, are we sure Andrew Berry's that good? We have too much riding with everybody else, and there's at least the good to say, well, but okay, things aren't where they want to be, but ... I got this good stuff to look at. Whereas with Deshaun, the football's not good enough, right? The engagement with like Browns fans en masse is not good enough. Now it's there's another lawsuit. And now it's, even though the Browns are the ones that paid Deshaun, even though the Browns are the ones that gave him $230 million guaranteed, something no other team has done above $100 million. People forget Kirk Cousins did have, I think it was $90 million guaranteed when he went from Washington to Minnesota. So the simplest solution is, it's going that way anyways, it's all about Deshaun. The problem is, it's not. The problem is, there are big things here. There are fears that we probably should live in that are realistic, that are things that, you know, guys, I'll be honest with you. Deshaun is part of what's holding the Browns back. The trade and how he's played, he's part of what's holding the Browns back from being what we want, which is as good, if not better, than the Ravens, Steelers, and Chiefs. But he's not everything. That decision and everything that's happened, how long it took to finally conform an offense to him, building with talent around him, right? Individual failures that have nothing to do with Deshaun, like the collapse last year, getting swatted in the playoffs. Like, these are all things that the Browns have to take care of. It's so easy to point to the Deshaun side of the street, and you're fair game. You are more than fair to be outraged and pissed and all the things that you might naturally be about the Deshaun trade and Deshaun himself and how he's played and everything that's happened this season, just this season alone. But this is not a situation where it's just as simple as bench that guy, cut that guy, ban that guy for life from the NFL, and all of a sudden the Cleveland Browns get dramatically better. There are still fundamental questions that this trade, this move, this idea has rattled free. It's not just about the Browns. It's not just about Deshaun. And the simplest answer, whether you and I like it or not, is that they figure it out together. That's simpler than just banish the guy to Alderaan. One of the reasons why we've been having this conversation is I think there is the idea that if the Browns were to bench or to move on from Deshaun, that all of a sudden every demon with this organization was going to be exercised, and it's not. I understand why we want it to be that way. I understand, and I do not judge anyone for saying bench Deshaun Watson. I get it. I get that it's not about these three games. I get that it's not even about the new offense. I get that Deshaun has just become panacea with like, or the panacea of like, nope, it's him. That's the guy. That's the boogeyman. Because it's easier to do that than say, well, but what about the head coach's decision-making at large and how he hired guys, how he's let go of guys, the subtraction of AVP and Bill Callahan and their role in this, Andrew Berry's drafting in general, and how much we should be concerned about that, or why Paul DePodesta is still here and what he does and the Haslams and their role in the leadership and whether they're still too hands-on. And guys, the answer is it's simpler because we don't see all those things. We don't see all the real things with that. The Browns shield a lot of those decisions better than they ever have. And so it allows us to focus more on the on-field, and the on-field with Deshaun simply isn't enough. But I think one of the things we've already lost sight of with the first three games of this season, the obvious answer for goals this season, guys, it's pretty simple. It's go to the damn playoffs and win the Super Bowl. That's clear. But I think the secondary agenda of this season is to get through this season, have Deshaun be healthy enough so that by the end of the season, we can have finally a real conversation about where is this guy. What is the chance of him? Listen, for the last 2 years, people have been saying he's never going to be that guy again. But it's been founded in a sample size that we can't really deal with. Like, nobody in the NFL makes decisions off 10 games when you've got a $230 million investment in a player. Just don't. You need as much information as you can get to make the right decision. That might not be more important than the playoffs right now. At some point this season, it might. And I think when it comes down to it, we want to be all about Deshaun because that makes us feel better about the gambit we've made supporting the Browns with him as the quarterback. And we want this to be about Deshaun so that this offseason, if you can move on from him, well, the Browns are going to be fixed. Because sports fandom is about hope. Unfortunately, the reality is this is 50-50 down the line. 50% of this is the baggage that Deshaun brought. 50% of this is, I think Deshaun is a bit stubborn, and I think he's insulated now in a way that I don't ever remember hearing him being in Houston. And I think Deshaun is, I think his faith, his confidence is shaken. I do. I think specific to this year, I think he's skittish behind this offensive line because he knows if he doesn't get the ball out right away, if he doesn't make the perfect play right away, he's going to get his ass beat. And he's probably going to make a bad play. That's a lot of pressure to get through. But again, that is Deshaun's cross to bear. The 50% with the Browns are who they hired as offensive coordinator, what the hell's going on at offensive line without Bill Callahan. It is Kevin Stefanski's individual in-game decisions. And I bashed him for it yesterday. I'm not going to do it again. But it's third and one with Jameis, keeping the offense on the field, and then fourth and one RPO for Deshaun, which was as mind-numbing of a result of three straight decisions as you can make. And you can extrapolate that across the whole game. It is 50-50. And when we get to whose fault is it the last 3 years, that's still 50-50. And there's a lot of stubbornness on both sides. I don't know that this is the most kumbaya of all marriages. That's me guessing, not me reporting anything. We want it to be about Deshaun because that's easy. But if we really want to be the Ravens or the Steelers, easy ain't the way you fix this thing. The Browns tried to do the easy thing, right, with Baker. Well, it's Baker's fault that we're not on par with the Ravens and Steelers. Learn your lesson. Life gives them to you. I don't know about you guys. Life has kicked my ass 1,000 times over. And just when I think I've got it, my ass cannot be kicked from any other direction. It is fully covered. It is bubble wrapped. All of a sudden, there's a foot coming out of a direction as if I was like shadow boxing Jackie Chan. The lessons are there if you'd like to learn them. Same thing applies in football. Same thing applies with running a football team. 216-474-0092. Who's failing who? To me, it's yes. It is one is Deshaun is failing the Browns, and the Browns have failed Deshaun. And the only way you move forward together is if you both stop failing each other.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
If you both humble each other just a little bit here, let's go with Scott. Scott, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, first of all, for people out there who say coaching doesn't matter, it does. Callahan has proved that. Our offensive line would not look like this if Callahan were here. He had a guy working out in the parking lot one time before a game, and the guy was serviceable during the offensive lineman was serviceable during the game. Coaching matters. Number two, Deshaun Watson is not a bad, bad quarterback. It could be the system. You know, one of the quarterbacks that could work in anybody's system and successfully throw the ball would be Dan Marino. You take Joe Montana out of the West Coast offense, I don't think we're talking about him today. Okay, so it's the system. Also, I think Deshaun is not in the right system. And now, like you said, he has happy feet. Is he looking down the field or is he looking at the offensive line to see if they're going to hold up? But the reason the fans are so upset, I think, above anything was Deshaun had a lackluster season last year, except against when he got hurt against the the Ravens in the second half and was remarkable. And then a guy comes in that hadn't played and shows us what the offense would look like for a drop back passer, not an offense what it would look like for Deshaun Watson. I think it's the system, man.
So there's a lot here, and I appreciate the call, buddy. I do think right now they're caught between two ideals, which is running some of the bigger concepts. And I don't think this is necessarily about Kevin being stubborn. I think it might be Kevin trying to protect his quarterback. I think it's Kevin trying to deal with the reality the offensive line is playing as bad as I recall a veteran offensive line playing in Cleveland. I've seen untalented lines play poorly, but this is those are good names up front, and they're just not getting the job done in one way or another. They're not doing the necessities either of communication. And I think some of that is they are trying to sprinkle in so that the team can get used to and get adapted to an offense that fits Deshaun better. So I do think there's an element of these first couple weeks that there is catch 22. I cannot absolve this team of not playing together enough or at points looking like they are wounded or shocked or you want to call them front runners, whatever. But when it comes to that, I am sympathetic to that. I do like that to me is why the bail on the offense doesn't work. I don't think they've been able to unveil the actual offense. So we're having the conversation. I've done the talking for 40 minutes about why I just think I get that benching Deshaun, cutting Deshaun, moving on from Deshaun is the easy answer. But I think the Browns have a little too often gone into escapism or I don't say cronyism, basically playing the blame game. And I think if you go back, you know, Baker was the fall guy for 2021. And he was an easy fall guy because he was irascible and because he didn't play the game with the media the way that they wanted him to play. And he also was the guy making a decision that I don't know that they wanted, which was to play through the injury. Now, I would have said a strong head coach would have sat his ass down, but Kevin Stefanski didn't feel like that was his decision. I digress. 2022, the fall guy for the 7-win season, despite the fact there were 11 games of Jacoby Brissett, 6 games of Deshaun, and an offseason dealing with the biggest distraction in franchise history, it was Joe Woods. And by the way, each one of these guys, maybe it was their time, but there was a specific emphasis of, well, that guy was the problem, move on from him. This last offseason, it was Alex Van Pelt. And so that doesn't mean, by the way, that these were bad decisions. But just because people can easily explain a decision doesn't mean that this organization still might be comfortable with finding in a reason, not an excuse, to pin more blame on somebody. And when we start talking about deflecting blame, that's an absence of leadership. And here's the thing. I know I went hard at Kevin Stefanski yesterday. I got more things to say about Kevin, and this is less about, I don't think Kevin's a good coach, but, and it's a little bit more about what else do I need to see from you? Because through 2 seasons, okay, this has been good. It's been as good as it's been, by the way. You got a playoff win, 2 playoff appearances, you know, your 2 worst seasons as 7-win seasons and 8-win season, even though there were expectations those years. Let's be frank, your bottom here was still much better than your previous high most seasons in the previous 20 years. But the bar has changed with Kevin. And the level of critique with Kevin should change. Because you and I still, if we're being real honest, just because he's won 2 Coach of the Years, just because he's won a playoff game, just because you've had 2 seasons where I believe you've won 22 games and had playoff berths, that doesn't mean he's going to win you a Super Bowl. And if every time we look at the quarterback through the lens of, can I win 11 games, can I win a Super Bowl with this guy, no one is immune from that in this organization. So even though Kevin got the extension, even though Andrew Berry got the extension, you never stop evaluating the people. Do I feel more comfortable with them? Of course I do. It doesn't mean they're immune from criticism, especially when things are blatantly obvious. The Browns have failed Deshaun in certain ways. And Deshaun, in his own right, has failed the Browns. The easiest way isn't to subtract one of those. It's to figure out why everybody's failing each other, get on the same page, and go win some damn football games. At the end of the season, this conversation changes. But today, you bought each other to the dance. Might as well try and dance instead of being a wallflower and going, man, I don't know what's going on here. 216-474-0092 or finger pointing. That annoys me more than anything. Let's go with Mike. Mike, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Hey, Nick, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Respectfully, I disagree. I believe it is. It would be that easy to as easy as benching him or just looking forward to cutting ties with him altogether. I think the proof is in what, like, we are. These guys that are around him are good. Is a good team, solid. They proved that last year whenever we had a carousel after him. Things smoothed out, and that was even after we had a carousel of quarterbacks coming in and taking over the helm. You know, I think Stefanski's best coach games were with Flacco, who came off of a couch. You know, I believe in Myles Garrett. I believe in David Njoku, Amari Cooper, Tony, Joe Batonio. These guys are good guys. All these guys, Denzel Ward. These are all pros. You know, we don't really need. We don't really need a quarterback that is going to be, I'll say, distracted. You know, he's emotionally compromised. I feel like by a lot of things, and including the most recent allegation. Whether he's guilty or innocent of that allegation, me as a person, if I'm accused of anything like that, I'm going to be emotionally compromised. I'm not going to be able to have my mind on leading $1 million, $7 million group of individuals to against other individuals of said caliber. I was against the trade to begin with. I think I said that he hadn't played in 2 years, so basically we were given $230 million to a guy that we would have to relearn how to be a quarterback in the NFL, and he has not. You know, a lot of these. The reason why he's holding on to the ball so long is because he's not reading his next guy, you know, like you said, and it definitely doesn't help with the lineman being injured and stuff. But if you remember at the end of last year, our line was a mess at the end of last year, and we were still winning. And I think it is as easy as giving Winston. We have a guy. That is, and he's, from what I hear, he is a good leader. You know, that was not an average quarterback play at the end of that game last week when Deshaun, you could see just before he reached to hand it off to Ford, he glitched up in his head. Like, you could see his body like glitching. All it is a handoff. So why glitch? Why do you got to think about it? And he glitched and he put it on his right shoulder pad, not in his breadbasket. I'm just being honest, you know.
Mike, we got to run, buddy, but I appreciate you, and I appreciate your thoughts, okay?
Thanks.
Good man. Mike there giving us a thought. I disagree with a fair amount of what Mike said. I know that the most popular quarterback in any town is the backup quarterback when the starter's not playing well. Jameis is a backup for a reason. And listen, some of that is how teams feel about quarterbacks. But, you know, quarterback wins and losses, you can't always judge. Jameis has thrown for a lot of yardage. Jameis has thrown for a lot of touchdowns. His record is 12 games below 500. And I think there's a lot of people around football who don't think you can win with a quarterback that turn the ball over. The Joe Flacco thing, to me, guys, Joe Flacco perfectly fit the Kubiak offense. So, just because Joe played well in an offense that fit him doesn't mean that means Deshaun. If Deshaun doesn't fit the Kubiak offense and that's all Kevin wants to run, then why did Kevin okay trading for him? Because that's the difficult question. The easy thing is, well, Deshaun doesn't fit the offense, so throw the quarterback out. But, okay, you knew what this guy had succeeded in. Elements of the New England offense, elements of spread concepts, and you've done none of that through 2 years. So it's wild to hear people go, well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't like the new offense. Well, one, I don't think we've seen the new offense. Two, it's three games. And listen, Jacoby fits the under center game better than Deshaun does. Even Baker fits more of that. And by the way, they're running some things in Tampa that make Baker look like a much better quarterback that Kevin didn't run. And those are things Baker wanted to do that weren't part of what they were doing because that's not what Kevin wanted to do. So that doesn't mean Kevin's completely at fault, but there does seem to be some stubbornness or some over-reliance on whoobies and safety blankets as opposed to like just asking the question, what does this guy do well? What is the system that fits him, and how do we do it? Real quick here, because I want to get into another point here. Curtis, what you got for us, buddy?
Hey, Nick, man, how you doing?
Doing very well. What you got?
Well, I want to first ask you a question, who's selling who? I mean, if you're giving up 16 sacks in three games, you know, and you lead the league and drive passes, I think the Browns are selling Washington. What we just saw Sunday, we never saw before, a quarterback get sacked 8 times and still throw over 200 yards and 2 touchdowns and no interception. We've never saw that before, Nick. I've been watching football 50 years, okay? So if they don't protect him, American Cabbage – kind of said it. Yeah, he's probably going to get hurt. They got to do better. And he don't have the same offensive lineman Callahan had last year because those guys are hurt. And he don't have any joke. Well, I understand that. But they got to do a better job of protecting this guy. The guy will wins more games than he loses every year. He's the best quarterback Cleveland has since I've been alive. If they don't protect this guy, they're in trouble.
Curtis, we appreciate you, buddy. I agree with the protection thing. People want to make, well, you had a worse offense. You also had an offensive line that had been here for 4 years, an offensive line coach. And that means scheme fits what they were asked to do. As part of the change of the offense, they did change what they're asking to do up front. And I don't think that's a problem. I think comfort is the problem. I think injuries are a problem. And I do think some of the coaching is a problem there. So I now to say he's the best quarterback that Curtis has seen. I've seen other quarterbacks. I will say that. I don't know. I can go all the way with that.